Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for the Christophers, and on today's show, I'll be talking God, politics, and culture with Peggy Noonan, a longtime columnist for the Wall Street Journal, former speechwriter for President Reagan, and author of the new book, The Time of Our Lives. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is columnist and best-selling author Peggy Noonan. You're likely familiar with Peggy's work from her years as a speechwriter for President Reagan. For instance, she wrote his address to the country in the aftermath of the Space Shuttle Challenger's explosion. Peggy is also a longtime columnist for the Wall Street Journal, where she comments on politics and culture and, as a lifelong Catholic herself, on matters of faith. Peggy has now collected her best writing, covering 1981 to the present, in a book titled The Time of Our Lives. To tell us more, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Peggy Noonan. Peggy, thanks so much for being on the show today.
It's a real delight for me. Thank you for giving me the time.
Absolutely. Well, at the very beginning of this book, The Time of Our Lives, you cite a quote from Pope John the 23rd, and it says, "Do not walk through time without leaving worthy evidence of your passage." Why did that idea resonate with you, especially in terms of putting together this collection of your writings?
You know, I think all writers, at the end of the day, all writers who are serious about it and who experience what they're doing professionally as a vocation are people who every day are doing their work to the best of their ability and trying to leave a sort of testament or trying to leave a sort of message or meaning to their work. And that hopefully is evidence of their passage. I do think a lot of people, no matter what your profession, experience their work that way. But you're trying to show, you know, I'm doing my best here. I'm trying to add to and not take from.
Right, right. Well, another thing this book is a testament to, because you write movingly in the book about the America you grew up in, how it was a safer place that provided you with stability and optimism. But that's not the case for a lot of young people today, because it's a more chaotic, stressed out world. What was it about that old America that made you feel safe and become who you are?
Well, the thing I write about in the book, I suppose this is a theme of mine that you can see throughout the book, but in the introduction to the book, in which I explain my attitudes about America and how we're all experiencing things these days, I talk about the fact that if you had an imperfect or challenging or difficult childhood in the old America, there were a number of things that could save you and preserve your optimism and make you hungry for life.
Yeah.
And one of them in the old days, sort of pre-some point, I don't know, maybe the 90s, American culture itself served as a protective force. American TV, American radio, American movies, they varied the programming and the output and the product you were getting, varied from the boring and anodyne to the inspiring.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
The messages given by the media in the old days were not these sort of harsh, frightening inducements and frightening pictures and messages that young people in difficult circumstances, kids in difficult circumstances, experience today. And I think I say in one point, in the old America, parents, you know, overwhelmed, they got jobs, they're making dinner, they're trying to run the house. They could say to the kids, as everybody was told 50 years ago, go out and play, go out and play.
Yeah.
You just go out there, come back. You may come back for lunch, maybe come back for dinner. And you, as a child, you were free to explore the neighborhood. What parents were saying essentially was go out and play in America.
Yeah.
America's a safe place.
Yeah, and I remember that myself growing up in the 70s and 80s, and it is, it is a very little bit different for kids today.
I don't think kids experience it as safe now. I know their parents don't experience it as safe. No parent says now, go out and play, come back for dinner.
Sure, sure. I'm talking to Peggy Noonan about her book, The Time of Our Lives. Well, Chesterton once described America as a nation with the soul of a church. Do you think that religious soul played a part in creating that optimism, that more positive culture that you're talking about in the book?
Yeah, I think probably religion does play a great part in America now.
Mm-hmm.
But America, I think, was just more normal.
Okay.
Not so heightened and so crazy.
Yeah.
And people, I think, those who produced our culture had a greater sense of discretion and responsibility, frankly.
Yeah. Well, I love this quote by Flannery O'Connor. She once wrote, "In the long run, a people is known not by its statements or statistics, but by the stories it tells." So you think the stories we're telling nowadays are showing we're more... we're more agitated or frightened.
Oh, I think the stories we tell now are simply darker.
Mm.
There's more violence. There's more enemy. There's a more of a nihilistic feel.
Yeah.
To a lot of popular music, to a lot of popular TV. Just a lot of darkness, a lot of violence.
Right.
I think we forget, you know, you're a young 28-year-old writer of a television series, a great television series. You may be out of touch with the idea that the images that 5-year-olds and 10-year-olds see in TV and movies can really frighten them and really lodge in their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're already coming from a different difficult place, perhaps a difficult family, it's not really good for them to be frightened continually by their culture.
Yeah, it just perpetuates the negativity and harshness and darkness. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'm talking to Peggy Noonan about her book, The Time of Our Lives. You mentioned religion before, and you describe being Catholic as the core of your identity in this book. So tell me, how did it become such a foundational aspect of your life? Was it the influence of a person? Was it an experience in your life? What was the process?
I think with all people who are Catholic, whether they are, quote, good Catholics or, quote, bad Catholics or lapsed Catholics or ardent Catholic, whatever flavor and kind of Catholic they are, two things really help them. One is being baptized.
I think, yes.
Do you know what I mean? That sacrament has power.
Mm-hmm.
It brings alive something within you. You're a little infant. You don't even know it. But at some point, it just may come to the fore when you're a grown-up. You may be, it has a little magic going for it that may benefit you very much. I know magic is the wrong word, but it's kind of how I see it.
Uh-huh.
Another is that if you are lucky as a Catholic, at some point being Catholic lands like a harpoon in your heart.
Uh-huh.
And you can swim away with that harpoon in your heart forever, but you will be pulled back. And that's sort of, I think, some matter of luck or blessing.
Yeah.
In my case, I simply was a person who made, I think, the greatest impression on me in my childhood was a great aunt,
mm-hmm.
who was a simple Irish peasant.
Okay.
And she had a simple Irish peasant's belief.
Mm-hmm.
And she had on her bureau mass cards and rosary beads. And a picture of Jesus, and a picture of the Sacred Heart, and a picture of a saint, and a picture of the Virgin Mary. And she had these things tucked into her mirror and tucked into her purse. And she was very kind. She was very nice. She was very sweet. She took me to Mass when I was a little girl every Sunday. I used to stay in the summer with her.
Mm-hmm.
And every Sunday she'd take me to Mass. And I thought everybody in Mass was very nice. So I got it in my head that maybe if you go to church, you become nice.
Okay.
Or maybe if you go to church, they just all happen to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, that's a nice place to be, church.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So that was very lucky for me. And she didn't proselytize. You know, she didn't really teach me about Christ. She had Christ just all around me.
Yeah, so it was the example, not the words.
Yes, it was the fact that it was so much essentially a part of her life. And so I think I inferred from that, well, it's normal to to have religious faith and Jesus as central to your life.
Sure. And this is Aunt Jane now we're talking about?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Well, you know, a lot of people don't, young people today, don't necessarily have those intergenerational relationships. What do you think it did for you in your life to be that close to an older person?
To be close to an older person? Oh, that's so interesting. You know, I used to teach a little Catholicism class to young women, to girls who were in private school in Manhattan. So I'd have them from ages roughly post-communion to I'd got them ready for their confirmations. And so I worked for a few years doing that just on Wednesday or Thursday afternoons with these fabulous young girls. And I remember one of them telling me, I asked them informally after class, we used to just sit around, eat cookies and chat. And I asked them informally, what signs and symbols of religious faith do you see around your house? I was just curious. And there was silence. And then one girl said, my grandmother wears a medal with Mary on it. And that was the only answer among about 8, 9, 10 kids.
Wow.
And I thought, well, thank you, Grandma.
Yeah.
What a great grandma. I wouldn't mind. I really enjoy seeing the signs and symbols of faith in people's houses, whatever their faith is. I just sort of, I understand something's being said there.
Yeah, it's
what
like
they're being said. What's being said is there is a God.
Yeah,
and it's important for kids to be aware of that.
Absolutely. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Wall Street Journal columnist Peggy Noonan. She was also a former speechwriter for President Reagan. In one of the columns in the book, you're writing about giving your speech to the bishops following the sexual abuse crisis. And you refer to this scene from Mel Gibson's movie The Passion, in which Jesus falls while carrying the cross up Calvary. And then Mary runs up to him and he says to her, "See, Mother, I make all things new again." And that was a really profound emotional moment from the way you were writing about conveying it. Why was that scene so profound to you in a deeply personal way, not just in relation to the topic you were addressing that day?
I don't know. I think it was in part the sheer tenderness of the son.
Okay.
Looking at his mother's tears, understanding that she was grieving because she understood her son was dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at her optimistically with faith and hope and said, "No, Mom, this is good news. I make all things new again."
Yeah.
And that is such a tender scene. What I was trying to tell the bishops, this is going back, I can't remember how long, 10, 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What I was telling them was, look, you're bishops of a great church. Believe in Jesus Christ and like him, make all things new again.
Yeah.
Stop with this scandal. Stop being defensive. Stop covering it up. Stop making excuses for people.
Mm-hmm.
Stop making excuses for each other. I mean, I was tough on them, but I believed they needed tough love.
Yeah.
I cannot say they appreciated my love or my tough, but it was important to me. I am a member of this church, you know, and I think I felt very strongly that they needed to hear from women.
Okay.
You know, I think they had kept themselves apart from women. You know, they, it's really too bad. They kind of weren't living, you know, in the church houses nearby women anymore. I do feel some very tough mother superior and a lot of tough gimlet-eyed nuns would have looked at what the boys were up to and said, uh-uh, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in that sense, do you think Pope Francis is a necessary person and influence on the church today?
He has captured some of the imagination of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very good thing. That's powerful. He has come across to people as embracing, and that's very important. I do think the most important thing he has done as Pope came in an interview that he gave, I think, to an Italian journalist shortly after becoming the Pope, in which he said, he described the world as a field hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That's what modernity has made this world into, a field hospital. And we are in triage now.
Yeah.
And the church has to approach the world understanding the shape it's in. And those words resonated with me. I think the world is a field hospital right now.
Yeah.
Can I interject something here that just came into my mind?
Sure.
That is something that I keep wanting to say.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that actually I've taken to saying to priests whenever I run into them. I can't help but think in America we've made a very great botch in the past 50, 60, 70 years, I don't know how long, in explaining to Catholics what it is Catholics believe,
mm-hmm.
and why they believe it. I mean the essentials,
mm-hmm.
the essentials. And I was in a conversation with a priest recently, and I asked him why he had done a particular homily which had nothing to do with Catholicism. It had to do with industrialization,
mm-hmm.
In the West, and how Christmas probably wasn't on December 25th.
Okay.
It was about a bunch of eccentric, silly stuff, and mm-hmm. he's not an eccentric, silly man. And I told him that I believe that every Sunday Catholics, those who come to Mass, are really hungry for the basics.
Yeah.
And then I said to him, you know what this whole church doesn't understand? We, in America, we are mission territory now.
Mm-hmm.
You have to come to us like we are a vast continent of people who've never been exposed to Christian or Catholic thinking.
Mm.
And you have to explain and proselytize and go through the Bible and explain who Jesus was and his followers were.
Mm-hmm.
Explain how we feel about the Blessed Mother. Explain Catholic thinking and why Catholics have these, quote, rules. We are in the West now mission territory. You're treating us like we're sophisticated, knowledgeable, and wealthy, and you come to us like we're an ATM and say, please contribute to the church, and we give you money.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but we're mission territory, and you have to treat us like natives who have never been exposed
really
to Christian thought. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe that. We got to start over in America.
What do you think caused the loss of that knowledge? Were we just not taught those things over the past 40, 50 years? Was it just taken? It was so ingrained in us that it would just stick around forever, you think?
I think it became rote.
Okay.
I think there was a lot of going through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
I think the great kerfuffle and shaking up of the blanket of Vatican II distracted everybody from teaching the essentials and got them arguing about side issues. And, you know, and suddenly we were having arguments about whether the priest should face the congregation or not. You know, you can argue about that forever, but could you remind us what we think of the Blessed Mother?
Mm-hmm.
Could you remind us of where we think miracles come from? What's a saint? Could you tell us the story of a saint? What does it mean to be a saint? How do you get to be a saint?
Mm-hmm.
Should I want to be a saint? All of these essentials got lost in these whacked out, stupid arguments that started in the 60s. And it became sad. I also think I am a supporter of, I speak English, and I love the fact that suddenly the Mass could be taught, could be given in English. This
mm-hmm.
made me happy. But the English is so bureaucratically, non-poetically, non-piercingly written
mm-hmm.
that it's very hard for priests to say it. A priest once told me, you know, the Mass now, it's like chewing cardboard.
Mm.
And, you know, that's not just a literary comment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a comment about the transmission of faith.
Okay, so we need some improved translations, and you think that would do a great deal in helping Catholics actually understand? I mean, I know to a degree after the
It might help a little.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it matters. I'm just so grateful that they haven't changed the Hail Mary. I don't know what got into them that they thought, leave the Hail Mary alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so surprised and grateful that they haven't changed Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee, to Hail Mary, you have so much grace, the Lord certainly is nearby. Do you know what I mean? That's the kind of thing they do. I'm so grateful they haven't touched the Our Father.
Yeah, well, Jesus' own words, that would be trouble, so.
I wouldn't put it past them. I really wouldn't.
I'm Tony Ross. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Peggy Noonan about her book, The Time of Our Lives. We're just talking about the church and arguments therein. And since we're talking about arguments, let me ask you a little bit about the political culture of today's America in terms of the polarization of everything. Do you see any way we can get past this whole division, which we just seem to be sinking deeper and deeper into, where compromise is almost seen as a bad word?
On the book tour, you know, I've been going all over talking about this collection, having a wonderful time. I do a lot of Q&A with audiences because I like Q&A, because I find out what's on audiences' minds. And the question you just asked, polarization, division, can we get past it, is asked wherever I go. Mm-hmm. It's so disturbing to the American people. I don't have a good answer. I know that in my lifetime, a rough unity has been forced and maintained by the idea of landslides. When a political party won the presidency in a landslide, such as 80 and 84, in 84 Reagan carried 49 states.
Mm-hmm.
That's a landslide, baby. when you've got a landslide, and you've got a Congress that either shares the president's party or can work with him, you get a rough sense of the nation has spoken. This is where we are. We've got a president we support. Go forward.
Mm-hmm.
We're not living in landslide times now. Presidents, even we have a two-term president now. He won by only a few points. Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, won the presidency in 2000, losing the popular vote. We're not living in a landslide age now, and so the popular vote, the decision to back this guy or that guy, doesn't resolve things anymore, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We may just have to lumber through as the divided nation we are. We're going through what has been called the big sort. Americans now increasingly actually move closer to other Americans who see things more or less their way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that didn't used to be. We have divided media. We have so many outlets in which we can find people who agree with us on things and stay in that lane. So we've lost a number of the things that kept us together. I think we're just going to have to muddle through like this for a while.
Yeah. Well, one of the ideas, I mean, you started in news back in the 1970s, and I got the impression from reading the book, part of the draw of that was the fact that, you know, you were taking part in something bigger, something that could have a positive influence on society. For young people nowadays who might be considering a career in writing or in journalism, what would you tell them about how to approach their field?
I would say, first of all, there's a heck of a lot of openings. There's a lot of ways to be heard now. The internet has made it really possible for young writers to get a perch. You may not be paid too well. You may work too hard. They may work you to the bone. You may not have a union to protect you, as mm-hmm. I thank God I did when I worked at CBS. So you may not have those things, but there's many ways to get a perch and have a voice. And if you are a writer and you are trying to be an honest and fair-minded judger of things, or you're being an enthusiast in one area or another, or for a point of view, there are many ways to be heard. I would say if you want to be a writer and speaker and producer of news, just stop at the beginning and look at the life and work of Tim Russert and move on from there.
Yeah.
Tim had very strong political feelings. He was a former Democratic operative, a liberal Democrat, worked for Mario Cuomo, worked for a while for Pat Moynihan, went into journalism, and amazingly enough, because he loved politics, understood politics, understood what his side felt, thought, was committed to, bothered to understand what the other side felt thought was committed to. Mm-hmm. He found it possible to be fair to everyone. He thought journalism was asking everyone their views, their positions, their reasons. Mm-hmm. He thought he could honestly grill everyone equally. So he was fair. You don't have to be without opinion to be fair.
Right.
You have to be committed to fairness to be fair. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. And that's an excellent column, which is in Peggy's book, The Time of Our Lives. In our closing seconds, just tell me, what are your hopes for people who read this column? This really account of your life in terms of politics and culture and writing and family.
There have been many reviews, and some of them have been so kind they brought tears to my eyes. But somebody said, you know, at the end of the day, this is like a love letter to America, but it's sort of like by an honest lover.
Okay.
who says, let me tell you your faults. Let me tell you what's not working. Let me tell you what you got to do. I got strong feelings on this, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, indeed I do. Love America. This is a great project we are part of, and I want it to continue, and I want to keep calling it as I see it. I take great pleasure in telling you what I think and why I think it.
Right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking to Peggy Noonan about her book, The Time of Our Lives. This is a book that celebrates heroism, humility, virtue, the wisdom of the common man, and so many more things. And people who love great writing will find insight on every page. So I encourage everybody to get Peggy Noonan's The Time of Our Lives. And Peggy, thanks so much for sharing your insights with us today.
This was a real pleasure. Thank you for the subject matter you chose.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
No one is too far gone for God. Regardless of how many poor choices you've made, God is still willing to welcome you back with open arms if you sincerely ask for His forgiveness and try to change your ways. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called From Sinners to Saints. It profiles several people who chose to turn their lives around after experiencing God's love and grace. To request your free copy of From Sinners to Saints, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.